Hello everyone, this is Tim Emerson from Kuan Yin Healing, and I'm today interviewing Robert Clancy. I am really excited about this interview. Robert is a technology entrepreneur, an acclaimed author, a spiritual teacher, and an inspirational speaker. He is actually has come out with a new book called Soul Ciphers, Decoding a Life of Hope and Happiness. And in fact, Marcy Smirnoff, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul and Happy for No Reason, has written the foreword for it. I'm looking forward to seeing that myself. Today, Robert is talking to us about overcoming grief, rising above life's difficulty. And as I said, I'm super looking forward to this interview. Robert, are you with us?
I am here, and I am totally present and looking forward to this.
Here in every way. Okay, great. Wow, where do we start? One thing that struck me when I saw your talk title was that when someone in our family or a friend loses someone, that there's a lot of outpouring and support at the time and for the funeral. But that kind of goes away, and they're left with the months and years of dealing with that afterwards, when that very visible support isn't there, and that can be a really rough time.
And you bring up a point that it does take time to get over, the loss and what people perceive as loss of someone close to them, and I've certainly endured over the last few years, some major losses. My 18-year-old niece passed away. Mm-hmm. Both of my parents, my best friend's sister committed suicide. My best friend died in January. So, there's a lot there to go through. And, there's different stages, and you just need to take time with each piece of that. And it's part of the human experience. And what I found is that, letting go of grief isn't letting go of your loved one. It's creating more room in your heart for the love that you have for them. And knowing that level of the love that you can fill and share with others. And when you get to the point where you can start talking again and sharing all those beautiful moments that you've had with that person, with others, that's the most beautiful part of the healing process.
Wow. That is beautiful. I remember vividly hearing once, because I was struggling actually with ways to be appropriate with friends who had lost people. And someone told me, I don't even remember who, but they said, everybody is afraid of, don't say that, you'll remind them of, because they think of nothing else. Go in and talk to them. And I love this idea of creating room in your heart, your love for them, and sharing that with others.
Yeah, and it does seem awkward, especially when you're coming up to somebody. My brother's daughter passed away. I mean, what do you do? I just took it full and front on and brought it to the forefront of our conversation. And as kids, we always wanted to hike on the Appalachian Trail. We had dreams of hiking the whole thing. My brother's like an outdoors guy. His favorite book is My Side of the Mountain, where the kid lives in the tree and has the hawk that hunts for him and does all that stuff. So I just booked this trip on the Appalachian Trail and just told him, hey, when we said we were going to do this, well, we're doing it now. And we started out in the White Mountains in New Hampshire. But one thing that I did, as soon as we stepped on the trail, the first step we took, I looked at him and I said, this is about finding your daughter. And we need to do this together. And she's here. In fact, she's everywhere. And I want you to look for the signs, because you'll see them, because she's all around you now. Mm-hmm. And that was just an amazing journey that we took. And we summited four peaks, did 22 miles, 5,000 feet, and got back. And he dropped into the bench. He was about a half hour ahead of me. He said, you know where my physical and emotional limits are? I said, I don't know. And he said, I left him about an hour ago on the trail. And, you know, we took out a toast. We poured I had a little tactical flask and said, this is for Caitlin.
Yeah.
We survived this. And, you know, we found this beautiful little flower at the top of the last peak. And there was nothing up there, just sand, because it was so far above the tree line. And there was this little tiny flower growing there. And, you know, immediately we both thought of her. And that's part of the healing process, is just understanding that, you know, our nature is love, and love is everywhere in nature.
You know, Robert, that reminds me of something Joseph Campbell wrote in about the hero's journey, is that that has always spoken to me as somebody who hikes in the mountains a lot. That, you know, we talk about the appreciating the majesty of nature, and we understand that includes nature in some pretty nasty moods, and we don't feel angry or judgmental or upset about that. We'd understand that's part of nature. Campbell talks about appreciating the majesty of being, that all these are the part of the wonderful experience of just being alive.
And there's a wonderful documentary. It's Finding Joe.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that, but
I
did watch that. It's very profound, and you know, every mythical story that we have is really the human existence of going through and slaying the dragon and dying and being reborn after, you know, something happens, and you're taken right to the brink of everything, but you find your way. And in the end, you find that you have everything you need to conquer everything within yourself. And that's really the beauty of all those stories. You know, you think of the Wizard of Oz or, you know, Camelot or any of those stories. They all have those parallels.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So would you say that you see overcoming grief as... part of this process of conquering the self?
Yeah, you know, we're not humans with souls. We're souls surrounded in humanity. And to understand that, you know, I am a consummate technology person. I'm super logical, yet I had this divine, you know, spiritual experience as well. So, you know, you can only think of me as being like Spock.
Mm-hmm.
But, When you look at everything, all the elements in the universe have always been here, always were here, and always will be here. And we're part of that. So I don't ever look at somebody being lost. In fact, we're the ones that are lost in our own grief. It's really about transcending that and taking things to another level of understanding that love never dies. It's like a single note on a beautiful symphony played here, but when it goes to the other side, it becomes this incredible music that's played forever.
Mm.
And you can access that right now just by the thought of the love that you have for that person, the guidance that they've given you. I just firmly believe that we're all taken in the time that we need to be when our journey's done and whatever it is that we were to accomplish. And it comes down to your legacy, what you leave behind. There are people that are still helping people who have been dead for 100 years or more.
Yeah.
Or even 1,000 years. And that's part of it. And I had that epiphany one day when I started thinking of what's the worst thing that can happen to me. And I did this exercise for like a year. I started saying I'd one up it. So I started small, you know, maybe I'd lose, you know, a finger or something like that. But, you know, it would increasingly get worse until, you know, my whole family's gone. Everybody I know is gone. You know, I always say death for the end, because I figured there was nothing worse than that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I ran out of ideas, I did wake up with that. And the next day, I had to one-up death, and I did. It was losing my ability to help someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that can never happen unless I allow it to. And I was in control of that. And then I was free. So it was just an amazing moment in my life when I came to that epiphany and it was legacy. What am I going to leave in my son what am I going to leave behind that leaves this place a little bit better? And that's when I started posting on my Facebook page and sharing inspirational thoughts every day. And now there's like 600,000 people following the post.
Yeah. Share with people the name of your Facebook page so they can check it out.
Oh, sure. Thanks for asking. It's facebook.com/guidetothesoul. And I just post inspiration when they come to me. There's 4 years worth of stuff. There's 60,000 words up there. So I do have to let you know that there's a disclaimer. If you read too many of them all at once, you're probably going to overdose on love, and I'm not responsible for what you do.
Robert, for those who aren't familiar with you, do you want to share with them some of the story of your awakening? Would that be appropriate?
Sure. You know, as I said, I'm a technology person, and I got 100 on a logic exam in college. That's how logical I am, and very analytical, scientific. Take things that, you know, there has to be scientific evidence behind things, mm-hmm. yet I did have a divine experience at age 19 that cannot be explained through science. So I have to live with that. And I kept this a secret for the past 30 years, even from my own family. And I decided in 2012, when my mother was going to pass away, I knew she was going that night. And I decided to tell my dad what I'm going to tell you right now. Mm-hmm. And it was at age 19, I went through a very difficult time. I lost several friends to suicide. I had other friends get killed in horrible car accidents, motorcycle accidents, you know, accidents with trains. I mean, it was just all at once within a very short amount of time. And then my girlfriend and I broke up. It was a very bad breakup. And I stopped caring about everything. And I started mixing prescription drugs with alcohol, getting in cars with people that were drunk. I, you know, just didn't care anymore and just said, you know, I'm done with life pretty much. And I was working in this restaurant, and one of the waitresses working there pulled me aside one night and said, I know what you're doing to yourself and you need to stop. And I tried to deny it, and I looked horrible at that time. That if you saw a picture of me, I had dark circles on my eyes. I probably had like an hour of sleep a night. I was really in rough shape. I probably weighed about 130 pounds or less. You know, mm-hmm. it was pretty bad. And she gave me that 50-yard stare that only your mother can give you and said, no, I know what you're doing. And I want you to do this when you go home tonight. She said, put your hand out. And she put this pamphlet in it that was how to meditate, had instruction.
Hmm.
And she said, this has gotten me through some very difficult times in my life. So here I am, 19-year-old, and she was about 24, 25 years old. I took this pamphlet, and me being the analytical person, read the instructions and followed it perfectly. But before I started, I just said out loud, you know, God, if you don't show me a sign of something, I'm done. I'm done with everything. And so I went into this meditation for about 3 hours, and then I thought I saw a light, and I opened my eyes and then shrugged my shoulders because there was a light shining on the wall. So, you know, I basically ended my meditation and thought, well, I thought I was having a divine experience. But there was something odd about the light. I couldn't break the beam of it. I actually walked over to it, and I was about a foot away from it, and it looked like a star on a black sphere. And then sat and watched it because it was interesting. And then it just unfolded into an angel, and it manifested right into my room. And I was nose to nose with this entity, and it was like translucent. I know it sounds crazy. That's why mm-hmm. I didn't tell anyone for 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you start a conversation with that? Well, yeah, it was an angel appeared before me, and then she touched me in the forehead with her index finger, and I was plugged into heaven, and I got all these messages, and life is good. And so I just went about my life, and, you know, it was changed forever that night. I did talk to myself in the mirror because I was the only person on this planet that would ever believe me. And I told my reflection that you're going to have to carry this for the rest of your life. You're going to have to live with knowing that heaven is real, that there is a God, that angels do exist, and you're going to have to accept that. You're also going to have to accept that you have a path and a goal in this life that she gave you. And I got these incredibly beautiful words that started on December 1st, 2012 with clarity that I've been posting. And it was about helping youth, and I'd be writing books and speaking in front of people and all these things. But it was, I was only 19 at the time, and it just, you know, basically the message was it will unfold when it needs to. And that happened sort of around 2012 when I started my Facebook page. So, yeah, that's sort of the spiritual journey of that. And the name I was given was Gabriel. I got to look into the eyes of this beautiful entity and got just amazing healing from that. And I just lived. I last 30 years, I just lived among everybody. And the only people I really told were those that were very close to death, so that they would have peace.
Interesting. Yeah, that's beautiful. I have, you know, I'm thank you for sharing that. I
sure
have found that it's, you know, when we stand up and share the, you know, the things we can't tell everybody, that people start coming forth. Well, you know, actually, now that you mentioned that, I had, you know, and
yeah,
and it helps other people come forward. Several of the people we've interviewed for this series have mentioned the sense of community that has sprung up among us, and it's interesting, the coincidences, because I started Kuan Yin Healing in January of 2012.
yeah.
And it was right after I had just learned a new healing technique, and my one of my closest friends, her stepmother had fallen down the stairs and was in the ICU and wasn't expected to live, or if she did, she'd be a vegetable. And I just felt kind of helpless. So I just learned all these new healing things. So I went out in the yard, and I was just, well, I wanted to do something. So I was practicing these. And as I practiced these, I looked up, and there was, and again, I'm like you, I'm the analytical type, and I want the proof for something, and here's the methodology. But I looked up, and I was surrounded by Jesus, Kuan Yin, and a round of angels. And this did not make me happy. This was very much a shift in perspective. And I thought, well, what am I doing here if all these others are here? And I heard very clearly, just keep doing what you're doing. And I did.
Yeah.
Week and a half later, that woman moved back into her own house and lived for years. I don't understand any of it. I, for a long time, I didn't tell anyone. I finally told my at that time I'd been sober for quite a while. I told my AA sponsor, who's not at all a woo-woo guy, and he listened and he said, you don't have to understand everything.
Yeah. So what I got from that, you know, when my experience is that what we're seeing and what we experience is not necessarily all of reality.
Yeah.
And there is another side, and I've gotten so many beautiful words. I mean, I can just recite them to you. One of them is, of all the journeys of life, you'll encounter valleys of despair and mountains of hope. Just know that the heavens are above the valleys and the mountaintops touch them. To reach the summit, take one hope-filled step past your fear, doubt, and worry. And I just wake up with these, or everything inspires me. I can just see a sign, and, you know, there's a billboard that said, peace of mind is a beautiful thing. And the words just rearranged for me. And it said, peace of mind may be a beautiful thing, but peace of heart allows you to see the beauty in everything. And I can just pretty much look at anything. Even a fire extinguisher can inspire me. Somebody challenged me once, and I said, all right, well, pick a word off of there. And they said, respiratory. I said, it doesn't work that way, but I'll work with that. And I said, you'll never have respiratory issues when the air is filled with love. Just breathe and enjoy life. And then they said, well, their other word is pressure. And I said, well, I'll just use that as a metaphor. When you feel the weight of the world upon you, know that love will hold up anything as long as your faith does too. And then they said, oh my God, you did that on the fly. And I said, fly, spread your wings with love, and life is always a smoother sail. And then they just said, okay, I'm done. And they're all memorized. Like, everything is, my memory is not this good, but they're all stored as, like, pictures in my mind. Mm-hmm. Thousands of quotes, like, all, you know, there's another one, I can see a guy with a dark cloak, and it's, when you're mired in the shadows of despair, know that there's always a higher light source behind any darkness. You just need to turn around to see it.
Mm.
And all these just come to me daily or whenever I want them. The most I wrote in one day, I think, was over 30.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's reminded me of there's a passage in Hermann Hesse's Glass Bead Game. This mentions when you look at the dark, cloudy night sky, it looks like the clouds are the depths, but actually the clouds are the surface and the stars are the depths.
Right. And then I get, you know, off of that, it's like even the sun has to face dark days, but it still has to rise and shine.
There we go.
See, they just come like that.
Well, let me ask you, Robert, because our goal here is to help people who are struggling. I remember when I was had just graduated college, one of my best friends, his dad died of colon cancer. And we were doing our very, very best to say the best philosophical and, you know, broad and comforting things we could possibly say. And then he said something that shut us all up. He said, you know, I hear all of that. I get it. I believe it. I understand it. You know, the river bends. He goes, but I miss him.
Mm-hmm.
And I had nothing to say to that at 22 anyway. So when logic and philosophy aren't working for us, when we're in that emotional grief spot or have trying to help someone else through, how do we proceed?
You know, it's a good question. It's, it's putting one foot in front of the other. I always have the metaphor of climbing a mountain. You know, the views are always better at the top. And yeah, it's a struggle to get there. But you just need to move forward, no matter what it is, just little things. You know, if, when you're writing a book, for instance, if you have writer's block, if you can just write a page, and if you can't write a page, write a paragraph. If you can't write a paragraph, write a sentence. And if you can't write a sentence, write a word. Hmm. It's easy to do, and it's moving forward through that. And it's part of our experience to understand that and to know how vast love is. And when you can understand that love is a simple word that we put on something so vast that we don't even understand all of it, because it describes the very fabric of the universe and how we're all connected. And when you can move forward in those little things, you know, just to open your eyes if you can't get out of bed because you're so deep in grief or depression, but if you can just smile, it can actually change the way that your outlook is, if you can share that smile with yourself. It's the easiest and best tool that we carry with us every day. And it can actually, I've heard stories where somebody received a smile and changed their mind about committing suicide because somebody smiled at them. Think of how powerful that is. And you carry it with you every day that you walk out. Every day you wake up, every time your eyes are open, be in gratitude for that because you can still smile.
Yeah, I can actually share a story of an acquaintance who was about to start an altercation with a cop, and didn't because I walked by and said hello. I didn't even know what I was doing, but that was enough to interrupt.
Exactly. Yeah, it's that simple too, and sometimes it's just that small exchange, and it's kind of funny how those things do happen. And you know, there are no coincidences. I realized that a long time ago. I only call them God incidences now.
Mm-hmm.
And they happen all the time.
Yeah, I was really struck. You've reminded me of two things. When I first started doing healing work, I had two very important lessons. That one was that we are never alone. People were always talking about the people in the room who weren't there, who they saw. and my own sometimes there were shared experiences, and also that I noticed that every time I worked with a person at this level, I felt intense love for them. And it's not because I'm such a wonderful person. It was like there was no option at that level. Mm-hmm. There was no option but to have deep love for this, the higher amazing person that this person is. And it messed with my worldview, something fierce, but it needed to be messed with.
Well, I had, you just reminded me of, I smile when I'm alone because I realize I never am. And it's kind of, that's how I go through the day. It's just that I'm always held, and I felt this incredible honor that this angel had appeared to me, and I never felt worthy of it. And I questioned for 30 years, why me, out of all the people on this planet, why was I picked to have that experience? Why was I given this gift? Why can't we share this with everybody? And on December 1st, 2012, that's when I woke up with the first quote for that. And it said, why ask why when you should ask why not?
Hmm. What a beautiful question.
And that's kind of the key to life. It's everything is possible. There's nothing that's impossible. It's just a matter of time and energy to figure it out or to overcome it or whatever there is. And when everybody's struggling, I was thinking about this earlier today, that when you're struggling in that moment of moments where you don't see a way out, it does appear, and you just need to ask or find the way. There's always a way out of whatever you're struggling with. And when you look back at, you know, things that I was struggling with, they seem very trivial now. I know they were really important at the time,
right?
But they're just water under the bridge now.
Right.
And I'm so far above and beyond that. And I, you know, if I had not realize what it was that, you know, for me, I feel guilty because I had an angel show me, you know, all of the things, you know, my wife, my child, and everything in my life that was coming, and to remove all my fear, doubt, and worry. So I lived that way for the last 30 years, and you know that you're held and you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back at what I was struggling with, it seems very trivial now.
Right.
That's the point. I think that if you just wait, light always wins the battle of darkness. It's impossible for darkness to win. It just can't.
Right. Yeah, and in a way, I've actually found that actually it's helpful to, once I started to trust that. There was a time when, coincidentally, the same best friend disappeared for 3 days. I got a call from a trooper at midnight and just trying to follow leads. And my partner asked me, it's like, so, you know, what are you going to do? And I just thought, it's like, you know what? She's fine. She goes, how do you know? I says, because I would have had a dream about it if she wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And to know and be able to trust that as a result of these experiences. And in fact, she was fine. She got an email 3 days later. I'm fine. I'll tell you the story later.
And you're like, okay, so you're on some journey, and it's good to know you're all right.
There we go. You know, I was. You've got me thinking, Robert, with this question, you know, of why not. I have heard that in the past, not in the positive, but in the negative. So, you know, why is this happening to me? Why not you? You know, it's. I heard an interview where the interviewer did not realize until the start of the interview that this man's wife had recently passed of cancer. And the interviewer was immediately caught off guard and backpedaled, said, oh, I'm so sorry. And the person being interviewed said, it's fine. And there was that, like 10 seconds, which on radio sounds like an hour.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, what the trick is to understand that it's not happening to you. It happens to everybody.
Right.
But this is the first time I've heard those same questions in the positive. You know, well,
yeah.
Why would I deserve this? Why and not you?
Exactly. And, you know, feeling worthy or not worthy of that. And really, you know, you just reminded me of when my mother was diagnosed with cancer. And it was really wearing on her psyche. And, you know, I know it was adversely affecting her health, just the emotional state of knowing that. And then she was diagnosed with dementia. And so her short-term memory and, you know, recent memories were gone. And my family was really struggling with that because they said, well, she's going to forget who we are. She's not going to remember anything. And, you know, she keeps telling the same stories over and over again. Every time I go there, it's like a story from my childhood that she was triggered to tell. And she would say word for word, pretty much the same story. Mm-hmm. And what we found was the silver lining in this. Because at the time, you don't see it. And that's right. Really the point is, the dementia actually made her forget that she had cancer.
Right.
And then when she told these beautiful stories over and over again because of the dementia, I know those stories now so well because she told them so many times. And there were, you know, maybe 15 different stories, but she would tell them over and over of things from my childhood. So I know detail for detail of, you know, her experience with that. So those were the silver linings, and I know it extended her life by not worrying about her health because she didn't have to anymore.
Right. When I hear a repeated story, I remind myself of the joke of the preacher who gives the same sermon every single week, weeks running until the congregation finally has the courage to confront him over it. And he tells them, yep, I keep giving the same sermon, and I'm going to keep giving it until you start listening and applying it.
Exactly.
Like, so I'm always reminding myself, what am I missing here that I have to keep hearing this until I learn to enjoy it? Let me ask you another question, Robert. I think sometimes when somebody dies, another emotion that comes up for people is guilt. So, for example, my mother died young in her 50s, and so it's quite a bit of time has passed. But at the time, my mother and I spent most of our time together on this planet, at each other's throats, arguing, and it was control issues versus control issues. And I can look back now and be philosophical about it all. But it was, you know, there are definitely things in the way of our relationships. And while I've made my personal peace with this a long time ago, it would be nice to sit down and have the rational conversation I could have today that I couldn't have at the time, or at least chose not to for whatever reason. And I think that's kind of a common thing where people feel guilt about things they could or should have done while this person was alive.
Right. And you know, I had, my best friend passing, and I did get to finally, you know, we took the gloves off. It was about a year before he passed, and his health, you know, I knew where it was going, and he did too. We just didn't talk about it. And then if you can have the courage to do those things, it alleviated having that guilt because I was able to say everything I needed to say to him. And I do understand that some people don't get that opportunity. But know that when the person is crossed over, that the only thing they feel is love for mm-hmm. you. And that's it. That's the only thing that remains. All of that other stuff and your little worries, your fear, your doubt, it's just like that passing of something that was important to you a year ago that is no big deal now. It's the same, and it works the same way. And knowing that, and I had beautiful moments with him at that point, because I remember the car ride home, and I said, hey, we need to be real, and we need to talk about everything. It's not going to be easy. Are you okay with this? And he said, yes. And I saw him at the holiday times, and it wasn't only his face because he was in a lot of pain, but I could see it written on his kids' faces as well as his wife because they were carrying it all. Mm. And after that, I didn't say anything that day. I waited a couple days and I called him and I said, hey, I know you're dealing with a lot of things, but I saw on your face, but more so I saw on your family's faces. I said, this is not going to be easy, but you need to face this. They need to remember their dad as a fighter, as somebody that can face this challenge, because that's your legacy. And he was, the last time I saw him, and then it was a week later that he was unconscious, and I just jumped in the car. I had to drive like almost 4 hours to Philadelphia because he was in the hospital down there. And I didn't know what I was going to walk into. I knew it was bad. I knew he only had hours to live. So I come through the hospital door. I don't even know. I'm through the parking garage. They kind of gave me loose instructions. And all of a sudden I hear, you know, we all called our kids called each other uncle or aunt. So, I hear, hey, Uncle Bob. I look up and it's his son and he's smiling ear to ear. And he said, I'm so glad you're here. Dad's upstairs. I can't wait for you to see him. In that moment, I was like, he did it. He did it. Nice. You know, they were happy to bring me in to see him. And here he is, you know, hours away from passing away. He was in really rough shape. And they were smiling. And they said, I'm glad you're here to see Dad. You know, and that's when you transcend things.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I'm wondering about if you'd like to talk about decoding the life of hope and happiness, about the soul ciphers a bit in this interview as well. I know a lot of people are curious about that.
Yeah, my first book is called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul, and it has inspirational stories in it. And, you know, it's been out since 2012. And I've had so many people come up to me, they love the book, and they said, you know, I love all the stories, and I saw how you got through forgiveness or how you did this. And then they asked me, how do I do that? And I had to laugh because I'm thinking, I just told you. Apparently they didn't make the leap. They were inspired by the story. And so then I was like, okay, I got to apply my programming side. So Soul Ciphers, I added 3 decodes at the end of each chapter. So it just gives you like simple practices you can do in your life. So one of them, you know, like the decodes on the chapter on grief, it just says rely on grace. Where there is grace, there is God. Wherever there is faith, there's belief. Wherever there's love, there's hope for God's grace. Above all else, God's unending grace is ever present for you, but it's up to you to ask for it. Mm. It's easy to give up your faith, but it takes courage to keep it during the worst of times. So that's the little decode that is, you know, I have 3 of those at the end of each chapter, and one might be, do you smile when you're alone?
Mm.
And have you thought about that? You know, being still or quiet, you know, each day, taking in the small moments of life. So I added these practical, explaining it in layman's terms, the takeaways, the 3 decodes for each chapter. And it's how you can reprogram yourself for joy and happiness. Because I've had so many people come up to me and say, how come you're so happy? You just must not have anything going wrong in your life. There's a lot of things going wrong. But I don't let them get to me on that level. I know that I'm held. I know that I can rise above. I know that I can laugh about things. You know, I'm a 5th degree black belt master martial arts instructor. So I don't have any fear when I walk down the street.
Right.
And when somebody, you know, you can get in confrontations with people. There's road rage and things. And I can just sit there and smile because I don't need to do anything. Because I can, and I don't need to. So it's having those moments and that kind of awakening or awareness around you. And I just smile every day. Since that angel, I haven't stopped smiling. I went to bed smiling that night. I was just so elated. I wanted to tell the whole world. And here I am 30 years later, and I'm finally getting that chance. So, yeah, I'm even more happy now.
Yeah. There's a definition of grace that I've always found particularly useful and comforting, which is that grace is something that it's not that it's deserved; it's simply given. So it bypasses this whole self-worth thing. It's like, it's not about being worthy or not. It's just grace is simply given. And it's there for the asking.
Yeah, I actually have words that I call them my downloads, because I'm a computer person, so I feel like these are being downloaded into me. So that's what I refer to them as. Mm-hmm. And it was a poetic download. It was, grace is given, your heart is forgiven. Today is the day to simply start living. And that's really the key right there.
Yeah. There's a Sufi description as well, that the sun shines on everyone, blessed and wicked alike. And at no point does the sun say, you know what, I've been shining for a while, Earth, you owe me. It simply shines. And to the benefit of literally everyone and everything.
Yeah, and I'm just so excited about this upcoming book, because it will heal people. It will bring such light, and that's what I'm so honored. All of the quotes and all the pieces that are in here are written by me through being a conduit of some type. That's the only way I can describe it. And being able to witness some incredibly beautiful, simple acts of kindness, and being able to bring awareness and consciousness to those, to others, because they say, I've had a lot of people tell me, you've had a pretty blessed life. You get to witness these incredibly beautiful things. And then at that moment, they realize they've done the same. And that's really the key. We're all on that journey. We're all on the Joseph Campbell hero's journey in this life. And to be able to share one act of kindness, it means everything. And that's the one thing that was answered at the time when the angel appeared, because I was so jaded at that time. I said, what does it matter that we help somebody live longer? Why do we even have doctors? Is it just to make money? Because why are we even trying to extend their life that much more? What difference does that make in the grand scheme of things? And when you think about it, it really doesn't.
Right.
Yet it does, because what the angel gave to me was, every act of kindness matters, and it feeds the universe in a profound way that we can't even describe. And when you share just that smile or simple gesture, it could be just the smallest thing, it means everything. It's sharing your light, your heart, your love, and that's always there. So there's, you know, beautiful moments like that that we all have. And that's the point. It's sharing that kindness makes a difference in the world.
Yeah, I think we have a tendency to focus on the things that are problems that need to be solved. And I remember vividly in early 2012, the first interview I had about Kuan Yin healing, I sat down to write myself out some notes so that I could tell my story of struggle and overcoming, and, you know, and as I sat down to write all this epic struggle that I'd been through to bring me up to the present, it was really clear that you haven't had a life of struggle. every single time something bad happened, something happened immediately at the same time to make it three times better. It's like you are blessed and given and gifted at every single turn at your entire goddamn life. You know, are charmed
beyond
belief.
That's the book
belief.
You need to write right there.
Yeah, it's probably true.
That's the title. I love that.
I'll add that to the list.
It should be just like, stop whining. You're blessed every damn minute.
You know, it's true.
And I do have at the end, I have this beautiful passage on grief that I'd love to read from this upcoming book. And it's called Waves of Grief.
Listening.
All right. Would you like me to share it now?
Please do.
All right. So, it's Waves of Grief. Why were we separated by this ocean of agonizing time. When the angels called for your beauty, my body could only fall upon the earth that reclaimed you. I grabbed the sand in anger, and it spilled from my fingers as you slipped from my life. Alone in the blackness of a starless night, I could only call upon grief's dark cloak to cover my shivering soul. Time's essence passed as an endless sea of sorrow that washed over me. Every unbearable wave that broke upon my shore carried but a few of my tears out to the desolate abyss. When the tempest finally passed, a single light appeared upon the horizon. I wiped the raindrops from my eyes and raised my chin. The rays of this new day gently caressed my cheek. It was love. Yes, precious love. It was then I left the comfort of the shore and waded among the glistening waves, and I realized you were swimming in that same great expanse with me.
Beautiful.
And that kind of, that's how you transcend grief. That's my poetic way of walking through that dark period out, and then we're all still connected. And when my brother and I went on the Appalachian Trail, I told him at the beginning, like I said earlier, to look for his daughter. And we found her out there. And I told her she's everywhere. And the next day we were in a national park, and I feel this hand go on my shoulder, and he's pointing. And this girl walks past that looked exactly like his daughter, wearing the same backpack. And I just smiled and said, there's your sign.
Yeah. Oh. You know, I have often said of my spiritual experiences that some people find the divine. Some people like me aren't that bright. The divine has to come and get them. and... one of the lessons that I have thought about a lot in my life is there's a friend who's very, very dear to me, and one of those, you know, God instances, a couple of different people have mentioned that this is a person with whom you had a connection in a past life. You were in that life like sisters, and did healing work, and she, passed early, and you were bereaved and went on with these other things, but that affected the rest of your life. In this life, she's very much alive, but we have long been separated into kind of her own things, and that frustrated me for quite a while because, you know, I'd like to spend time. And then I kind of realized there's a metaphor here, so that in one sense, in this life, she's gone, but she's not gone. And that's true of people who have passed as well. They're gone, but they're not gone.
Yes. And, you know, people say, well, I can't talk to them anymore. Sure you can.
Yeah.
Then they say, well, they don't listen. I said, sure they do.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see them. You're not looking hard enough. They're everywhere and all around you.
Yeah.
Well, I miss their love. It never left you.
Yeah.
There's always an answer for that. And when I thought of it on that level, I realized that's right. And, you know, when both of my parents passed, I thought, you know, most people would be devastated. I was actually happy because I realized I have two of my greatest supporters on that side cheering me on.
Yeah. When I, hit the bottom of my own addiction, it was a rough time. I lost 20 pounds in 2 weeks. I didn't eat. I didn't sleep. I basically drank and ran. And, it was a very difficult time. It stopped because I was at the top of a hill, on my country running route. And my grandfather was there, who had been dead for years. And it was And the second I saw him, everything was peaceful. It wasn't good, but it was okay. And I remember that feeling to this day. Everything was peaceful and it's going to be okay. And again, like you, this isn't a time when I didn't believe things like that. But it was, I mean, we were face to face. So I should.
And that's the key. Well, losing weight, I think most people would probably want that. Maybe it's a different way to go about that.
Yeah.
And I always, and I think one of the things that we've kind of touched on this call that's been in the background is you need to laugh about things that have occurred to you in your life.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. I've always had fun since then and just been, you know, life is meant to have those moments, and even in the most heated arguments, like, or different things, I'll just burst out laughing sometimes and it just stops the whole thing. It's pretty crazy, but you can laugh your way out of most things that are so horrible. Like, I was heading to the airport. I've got a foreign exchange student who's been with us for 6 months, and I got to get her luggage in the car and get her to the airport. I open up the door and there's a groundhog sitting in the garage. And I'm like, what the heck, you know? So I'm trying to get this thing out. We're trying to make the plane, you know, get her to get through all this stuff. And I turn the key in my car, and every safety device has been disabled in the car. The groundhog had chewed an entire wire apart in the car. And it's a Mercedes, so it's, like, totally messed up now. And it's, like, every light's on, and there's, you know, your front-end collision doesn't work. Your radar doesn't work. The airbags are disabled. The seat belts are barely working. Enjoy your day. And I'm, you know, at that moment, I just laughed. I was just going, all right, so this groundhog is trying to kill me. He's an assassin.
Oh, no.
So you got to take in those kinds of moments, and instead of going, you know, oh, my God, what's the bill going to be for this and all right. The damage and everything else, and then, you know, and the thing was still up inside the car. So I was like, I'm going to drive to the airport. He's apparently going to take the next flight, too. I'm not sure where it dropped out, but...
Oh, dear. One, I haven't had to do it for a while, but one technique that I have used when I observe myself getting into a conflict is I will picture God sitting on my shoulder. And sitting on my shoulder, I picture God saying, you're right. You know, the people you have to do it. I don't know how you do it. You're a saint. It's clearly you're completely in the right. It's there. And, you know, and then it's so ridiculous that it makes me laugh. And I realize, okay, maybe I'm a little over invested here and maybe I'm not really getting the full perspective. But,
yeah.
Just maybe. So, wow, Robert, one thing that comes to mind for me, for as someone who is dealing with grief or helping others to deal with grief and rise above life's difficulty is simply to get a copy of your book, Soul Ciphers, Decoding a Life of Hope and Happiness. And even if they read a page a day, that would give a positive spin and a step towards walking towards the light.
And the nice thing is I wrote each of these as very short stories because I don't like to wade through big books either. But you can open up to a random chapter and it's just, you know, whatever. My first book is like that too, where you can just kind of open it up and just read that one little short story. So little bite-sized chunks, you know, so you don't have to spend hours and hours reading it.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know why, but my friend Louise keeps coming up in this interview. She reads books that way, and it drives me nuts.
Well, this is perfect for her, then.
I guess so. That's start my Christmas shopping there.
Yeah.
Wow. I I never know what to ask you, Robert. Everything seems such a beautiful stopping point. Why don't you move to share with us about overcoming grief?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's so many ways to get over, and it's not really that you're getting over, it's that you're climbing through it, and it's part of life. So just, even in those moments, you have to enjoy that pain that you have from those moments to be able to carry through. And, you know, my friend, I just, the visual of my other friend, there are five of us who are very, very close. And this one friend is a consummate Steelers fan. And growing up with him, I've known him since 2 years, you know, when he was 2 years old. So he's got the Steelers socks, the lunchbox, the raincoat, the hat, the gloves, the, you know, the windbreaker. No matter what, the kid always had gold and black on. And we're standing at the gravesite, and he is doubled over, heaving from his grief and crying. And his wife's standing next to him. And he has his Steelers hat on. You know, it was cold. It was in January, and we're in Philadelphia. So I walk over to him, and the friend who passed, his name is Jeff. I said, you know, if Jeff was standing here, he would, and he was about 6'6". I said he would have leaned down right into me and said, "What the hell does he have that stupid Steelers hat on for?" And he immediately burst out laughing. As hard as he was crying, he was laughing at the same time. And that's kind of the key, is to see the humor and the beauty of life in those moments. And it healed him instantly when I did that, because I said, Jeff is standing right here and he's telling me to tell you that. So I'm just going to let you know. And we just laughed. And that took out all of that at that moment. Just of those, you know, painful things that are happening. You know, he was just so distraught over, you know, Jeff was sort of the glue that held our group together. And then we realized, you know, we all have to do this now for him.
Yeah. I about, I know some folks I've lost, I've always looked at it as, well, not always, but more of late. I lost a dear mentor 2 years ago from my university time. And it was so wonderful listening to all these stories of people who have known him, you know, for much longer than I have. I mean, he's 30 years my senior, including stories about how he got started, which was he was literally a ditch digger, and they were working on campus, and he just threw his shovel down, told his foreman, "God damn it, I'm tired of digging ditches. I'm going to go to college." and became this amazing scholar that I sought out as my mentor, and and he was beautifully loved and, you know, active in peace things, and several times stepped in when I was riled up over something and put it in perspective quickly and sharply.
Well, that's the key word, I think, to close out the interview. It's really, it's about perspective. If you think you're at the foot of the mountain or the top of it, your perspective is always different, and it's looking at it in both ways. And that's the key, to understand that there's always another view of the situation. And, you know, I met a young man who was suicidal, and I was at the hospital, and they asked me to speak to all this young group of people. And I asked him why he attempted suicide, and he said, "Well, I lost my dad. And he's my best friend in this world, and I can't live without him." And I just looked at him and I said, do you have kids? And he said, "No." And I knew the answer was no.
Right.
And I said, "Well, don't you want to be the dad for your kids someday that your dad was for you?" And he never thought about that up until that moment.
Yeah.
It's perspective. Changing your perspective changes everything.
It was interesting at the memorial service. I had this really strong sense of him saying to me, you know, "So that's how it's done, kid. You got it? Can you do it?" and you know, after that, for a couple of months, I kept I didn't say anything for a while, but I kept having the feeling out of the corner of my eye that I saw him walking through halls. And I finally mentioned that to a couple of colleagues, and they said, yeah, that's been happening to me too.
Exactly.
Yeah. What a beautiful interview. Robert, I'm so grateful that you took time to share today. And thanks for taking time to writing these beautiful books.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought I was only going to get one done, and now I'm on the fourth one. So I don't know how that happened, but apparently I had more plans. But the fourth is coming, and I already know what the fifth book is going to be. So that's done yet.
All right. So everybody keep tuned. So the new book then.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just been just great. And, really to focus on this one area, which is so critical for so many people. So I hope in some way I brought some hope, some peace, or some light to somebody that's struggling out there.
Thank you. And then you can learn about the new book at soulciphers.com, soulciphers.com. I'll have a link for that as well for folks. So again, I'm not currently in a period of grief, and you've lightened my own heart. So I'm sure you've lightened the hearts of people for whom the material is more timely.
Wonderful. Well, peace and namaste, and keep that love in your heart.
Thank you so much, Robert.
All right, thanks.
Take care. All right.
So you're all set. Well, you're going to do your summary.
Wonderful conversation we've had with Robert Clancy. He's had really knows his subject area. Certainly, he's had some time to get over losses of his own. He's very recently lost several people, and he's lost several people. Starting from when he was 19. A young niece, parents, suicides, best friends. It talks about the importance of stages, of time to heal each piece, that, each part of this is part of the experience. He talked about creating more room in our heart for our love for them. Rather than focusing on their loss, and to share that love of them, for them with others. It can be very awkward talking with someone who has undergone a loss. What do you say? But he says, he deals with it full, it's front on. And he shared the story of, his brother who has just lost his daughter, about taking a trip they'd long talked about on the Appalachian Trail and just doing it. And about that trip being about finding his daughter, who was here, there, and everywhere, the signs all around, and then finding them. About surpassing limits, about the little flower they found at the top, about seeing a girl who looked just like her, had the same kind of backpack, about about that connection in nature and love, which really speaks to me. I've always been drawn to Joseph Campbell's work and to nature myself. I walk in the mountains a lot. And talked about the majesty of being, the good, the bad. It's all part of the incredible experience of being here and alive. Of that sense of being reborn, of finding our way, that we'll always find what we need. And all about conquering self. Robert describes us as really we are souls surrounded with humanity, and that all the elements of the universe have always been here, that love never dies. It's like each of us is a single note in this grand cosmic symphony, and that doesn't change as we pass. He talked about the importance of legacy, and there are people who have been long dead who are still helping us through their legacy. He talked about getting through some difficult times himself by focusing on what's the worst thing that could happen. And as he progressively thought about worse things, you know, he eventually got to death as an end. But then he realized that wouldn't be the worst thing, that the worst thing would be losing his ability to help other people, and that that can never happen unless he allows it to happen. And what a beautiful thing. We can never lose our ability to help other people, even in death. And what a wonderful way to think about our lives. Robert himself, interestingly enough, is from a very analytical, scientific background, and which got challenged when he had a divine experience at 18, something that he didn't talk about anybody for 30 years. He eventually told his dad, he shared a story about it, you know, when after his friend had committed suicide at 19, that he really stopped caring about his addiction to pills and alcohol. That a woman said to him at a restaurant, I know what you're doing to yourself, and she gave him a copy of How to Meditate, which he started doing, and then he had this experience with light and the angel. Just a beautiful, beautiful story. He talked about how we can move from despair to hope, but just moving one step past, that it's a lot like mountain climbing. The despair of walking down one side is up the slope of the next summit. That this is the way past doubt and fear and worry is just take one step past it. That one small step. He talked about rather than focusing on peace of mind, focus on peace of heart. I love that. About proceeding just with one foot in front of the other, moving forward. He reminded us just to, you know, how vast love is. Just even if you just smile, that alone will help. Just make yourself smile. He reminded us that we are never alone. We may feel alone, but we are never alone. We are always surrounded by love and help. We might wonder, like, well, why should something like this in a positive sense happen to me? So it's why not? You know, why not? That there is always a way out, that you are always worthy. And that's true of each and every one of us. He talked about finding the silver lining. So, you know, I know many folks have this. This has been true in my own family, of the difficulty of dealing with someone going through dementia and you know, hearing them as they lose their short-term memory, telling the same old stories over and over and over and over again. He goes, but you know, those are beautiful stories that are now really etched in our memories after they passed. Sometimes when someone passes, we feel guilty. And he shared the story of, you know, when his best friend was dying. There was a time where they really took the gloves off and worked through that and got real with each other and talked, you know, and. When he crossed over, he felt simply love, that they were able to transcend that. But even if that hasn't happened, that we tend to say things, well, I can't talk to them now. He says, of course you can. Well, they can't hear me. Well, of course they can. And he also shared that understand that once somebody passed, the only thing they feel for you is love. He talked about his new book, Soul Ciphers, Decoding the Life of Hope and Happiness. And that in that, each chapter at the end, he has decodes, simple practices we can do. And in the chapter on grief, he talks about relying on grace, about asking for grace. Smile when you're alone. We can reprogram ourselves for joy and happiness. He reminds himself that he is held and that he can always rise above. So this is a book that will really help people heal. It sounds like a wonderful, wonderful book. I'm at the point we're doing the interview. The book is not out yet, but I'm looking forward to getting a copy myself. At the time you're listening to this, of course, the book has already come out. He reminded us, too, that every act of kindness matters. It feeds the universe, your light, your heart, your love. So Wow, it's just amazing. He read a passage about ways of grief. I remind us that we're all still connected, and that his brother, in fact, found his daughter on that hike. It's about getting over and about climbing through, about shifting our perspective. And that love, that relief, that release, is all there and waiting and caring. Listening to Robert, you know, he triggered several things in me I haven't thought about in a long, long time. And I'm looking forward to spending some time and honoring those parts. And I'm guessing that he probably has for you too. So just a beautiful interview. If you'd like to learn more about Robert and his work, you can find Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul at guidetothesoul.com. And you can find the new book at soulciphers.com. soulciphers.com. And check out his Facebook page. He has 600,000 fans there. Facebook.com/guidetothesoul. A wonderful page full of inspiration. And so if you do find yourself in a place of grief and suffering, checking out those, reading a page of the book a day, these are ways, are small steps that can get you started forward. And I will share with you in leaving, actually, something someone told me a long time ago when I was struggling, it was a stranger, and I will share with you. If no one has told you that they love you yet today, I love you. And so do the beings around you, as Robert has so beautifully reminded us. So a beautiful soul and beautiful work. I hope it's helped you. I'm sure that it will. Take care, everyone.